Alder Mondo.
Hi. I'm going to start. This is one of the first paintings I did in the undergrad at UCLA. I'm from San Francisco, and there's a really large Chicano art movement in San Francisco, the Mission District especially. I grew up on 25th in Alabama, which is around the corner from Galleria de la Raza and Studio 24, two very prominent Latino Chicano art museums. So when I was growing up, my exposure to art, the first exposure to any sort of art was walking around the neighborhood, seeing the murals, going down Balmy Alley, seeing all the painters that had done work on these places. So when I got to UCLA, I was kind of going through culture shock. Because it was more like a mainstream academic art school, and really not interested in any sort of Latino Chicano art history or any sort of art history dealing with any social movement. It was more just sort of an art for art's sake sort of history, and then what was being taught. So I kind of did this big painting expecting the worst, because it was referencing, like, I guess, like Cholo art, and I showed it, and no one seemed to get it. They just thought it was me posing, because they really hadn't any exposure to even the references I was using. So it was kind of a flop, I guess, for that one. But so then I was taking a photography class, and again, it was around the time, I guess, when Stefani was getting really big, No Doubt, and there was all this whole, like, resurgence of, like, Chola aesthetic style and, like, mass media and market. So I decided to ask my friend Anne. She's from Newport Beach. She's this blonde girl who decided to dye her hair red, like, right before this photo shoot, unbeknownst to me, which I was really pissed, but that's okay. So she was supposed to be blonde, but I wanted to make her into, like, a chola and do, like, a chola photo shoot, like, just go through, like, what the steps you need to become a chola. And so we documented actual how we made her over to be a chola, or it was just me, my friend, she was filming this. So, and I guess, like, I don't know, in San Francisco it was, like, a big deal, like, everybody wanted to be, like, I don't know, for me, growing up, San Francisco was pretty ghetto, and growing up in the, like, late 80s, early 90s, there was a lot of gang activity happening, so it was pretty much you had to fit in to not get jumped. And so everybody knew how to look like this, always my friends did. But, and it was for, like, a throwback to, like, the 70s, too, what you try to do. So sometimes, like, people get it wrong, like, you'd see some girl with, like, blue, like, lip liner instead of, like, brown, it's kind of weird, but, so this is just, like, documenting me. And these are all video stills. I actually didn't know how to see the video stills, so I like pictures of the video. During this time too at UCLA, I did this other video documenting my grandmother, watching her Japanese soap operas. I'm half Japanese, my mom's Japanese American. They were during the camps, and my dad's Mexican. So one video was her just watching the soap opera, and then there's actually, like, a TV in the space there with you. And so every so often she'll turn and translate and tell you what's going on. So you're, like, sitting there with her. And it's kind of hard to understand her too, but that was another video piece I did at UCLA. She actually sat there for, like, I had this tape, this soap opera that my teacher gave me. He's like, do something with the tape. And so I got this like Japanese soap opera, and it was actually like 2 hours long, and she sat through the whole soap opera and like translated everything for me. After UCLA, I started working at Self-Help Graphics, which was a really amazing influence and amazing time for me. I met a lot of artists and had a lot of opportunity to show at Self-Help. I thought I was going to be a secretary for the rest of my life. Like, I was assuming, like, okay, I got this job at Self-Help. I'll just work at Self-Help during my day and do my art on the side, and everything will be great. I didn't really realize that you could actually make a living off your art, or you could just be an artist. Like, that was something completely foreign to me. But one of my friends pushed me to apply to an art residency and said I really should go back to school because I was a horrible office manager. Oh my God. Like, it was not good. So for everybody's best interest, I went back to school. And these are some of the works that I did well in between graduate school, and then I did a lot of Day of the Dead shows as an artist in the Latino art circles. You kind of do a lot of Day of the Dead shows because they're the like open call, anyone can be in them, and everyone's always looking for a new Day of the Dead artist. So this is a piece I did called Day of the Dead Fan, and he was just wearing a Violas Muertas t-shirt because I didn't want to do another skeleton drawing. I wanted to do a portrait, so this is my way of getting in there. And I did this portrait of my friend John. He's actually a friend of yours as well. And I wanted to use like those vending machine sticker reference because I really love those vending machine stickers. But I wanted to put my own like personal take on it. A lot of what I try to do is like take something really like I guess generically mainstream and make it like personal. But then like, even these stickers aren't that mainstream anyways. Did a lot of portraits. These are all like in the middle before graduate school. This is a show for this is a show called Redo China, which is like reinterpretations of China. And I took like these, I guess my Chinese friends from San Francisco, who are like these like witch lesbians, and contextualized them in sort of like the stereotypical feminine cherry blossoms, sort of like a way to like reinterpret China, but then also to like for me, I guess growing up, and my mom too, who's Japanese, being stereotyped as like a passive Asian woman all the time, and just like trying to address those kind of things with this work. And then when I first, so this was I guess the first drawing I did once I started graduate school. And I just colored pencil, lots of origami, prism paper. This was called, I think, 4th of July in Pico Rivera. And again, I just take a lot of photos of my friends hanging out and just wanted to, I guess, reinterpret them in my own way. And I guess just show people my own personal history or my own narrative. And I thought it was funny because that girl, Juana, she had like a Zapata t-shirt on, and she made a point to tell everybody, like, this is my 4th of July, that's why I'm wearing a Zapata t-shirt, because it's like an anti-4th of July or something like that. This was done for a Peachy folder show, and this was Peachy Los Angeles, and I just tried to do all these different like subcultures that I would see around LA, like punks and like day laborers and Morrissey fans and goths and the mods. So I did this piece. And then too, I started to do these drawings on handkerchiefs. When I was at UCLA, my friend was curating a prison art show, and it was all work done with ballpoint pen on handkerchiefs. And I know when I was in high school, me and my friends used to buy Teen Angel magazines. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but it's like prison art or like cholo gangster art. And a lot of it was ballpoint pen drawing, just like really intricately drawn ballpoint pen drawings. And we would try to copy. So that was pretty much like really early influence with Teen Angel magazine. And So he showed this prison artwork traveling around the country, and I thought I really wanted to try it because they're just so beautiful. So, but I did my own interpretations of them, where I just did my friends, and then this series was like the Holy Cuatro, because I don't know, there's like Morrissey, Susie, Dave Hanna, Peshmerga, and Robert Smith. Like, are kind of like the icons of like Chicano, like alternate goth, like. That they're kind of like the main ones, so it is like homage to them. And then I also did my own friends. And some of these are details. And that's me. And that's the Marcy. And also in graduate school, it was just really difficult for me to talk about my references because a lot of people didn't understand what I was referencing, what I was doing. It was really hard for me to talk to a lot of people there about what type of work I was influenced by or what issues I was dealing with in my work. And so I made this video piece where I took maybe a lot of the students, the Latino and Asian Asian students that I kind of had similar dialogue with about struggles about what we're trying to do with our work and how it was really hard to translate that into the school, which was predominantly white, because I think in my class there was no Latinos at all. I think I was the only one, and I'm half, so there was like half a Mexican in my class. And so it was tough. So here you have like two undergrads and like some people in the class above me. So I videotaped them sitting there acting as if they were in a critique situation. And I projected them life size during my actual critique. And the whole piece was weird because it was just them. And there wasn't really we were talking about any objects. It was kind of hard to talk about it because people were like, well, what are they critiquing? I was like, nothing, it's just the fact that they're here in the critique. You know, sort of suggesting like, what if this class was a little bit more diverse? You know, would it change the way people thought about art, or who was seen as most smartest in the class? Because maybe it would, you know. And yeah, that didn't go over too well either. Then I started making these paintings, like, and actually I took photos of. This is one of my students here, Albert. But anyways, I was teaching at Self Help Graphics, and I thought it'd be really cool, like, if what if these students were at CalArts with me? So I took pictures of them and then did these photos, or these, sorry, paintings on canvas. They're 6x4 feet, and then they have like little easel backs to them, so you could take them with you wherever, whatever critique you're in. It's kind of like they had your back, so you put them in there, and like when you're talking about your work, you'd be like, oh, like, what if they were here too? It was just kind of a consideration of what if. And then also, I still did regular portraiture, and I didn't really use that. The institutional critique was more of like my own reaction and despair, you know, at school. But I still did work that I really liked to do, and was born out of more of like a passion rather than a reaction. And then this is sort of a combination of the two. And this is my thesis show, which was called Looking at Art. And sort of taking the ideas of the paintings that I did in the video installation. And I did these like large scale ballpoint pen drawings on canvas, because canvas is more of like a high art reference rather than like a prison art. And had my friends looking at you while you looked at them, and you kind of get it. So. That's Sandra. You should have bought. And these are 6x4 feet, so they're like life size. And it's them installed in the gallery. And this was in after, like, I guess my last piece I did at school, and I was sort of tired of doing like these institutional critiques and just getting nowhere in the discussions, because of course I was still only half Mexican, right? So there was really nothing I could really dialogue with people that really didn't have any reference or attempting to understand what I was trying to go through, and it seemed like everybody was taking everything really personally, and accusing me of being a reverse racist, and why weren't there any white people in my work was the main sort of debate that kept happening, and that I was segregating these minorities onto these canvases, and what was I doing, how horrible a person I was. So I just started to do what I just did my friends again, the ballpoint pen and or colored pencil, and so this was a collage piece. And then this is a print I did at South Pole Graphics like a few months after I graduated. And so it's a 6-color silk screen. It's not actually a piece of notebook paper. It's all trompe-l'oeil. So it was pretty much summing up everything. I kind of dealt with graduate school and just did this piece about, I took this class, this Deleuze Guattari class, and basically it's, I don't know if you ever study really wordy European theory, art theory, but it's pretty much Western European identity politics. That's all it is. I mean, and it was basically saying the same things that all my Chicano studies classes said, but just for white people. So I kind of wrote this piece about Deleuze and Guattari and what they're talking about, and just how I really appreciated them, because it was like I already learned it, but it was just done in a way different, just thought differently. So, and then I still did these drawings. These are kind of small ones. And this is my altar to Chicano goths, because every day is Dia de los Muertos for them. And that was for another Day of the Dead show, because I do a lot of those. This was a funeral wreath for my grandmother, or my uncle as well, who were in the internment camps, because when they were, in the camps, you don't really have any access to flowers, I learned that, so all the flowers and pictures of funerals that happened there were paper flowers, so I did this for another Day of the Dead show. So I made this out of washi paper, which is a really fancy Japanese silk-screened paper. And then this is a screen, on-found screen, a painting on screen. Another colored pencil with collage, prison paper, origami paper. Karen actually has this piece. You don't know, she lent it out. So this colored pencil, and then a ballpoint pen. This was times on a bed sheet. Collage, paper, colored pencil, detail. That's a quinceañera on the 110. There was this girl I was driving on the 110, and this girl was in this huge white Hummer limo next to me, having the best time ever. She was busting her dance moves in the car, and this music was playing. And I thought, oh my god, that's such an awesome image. So I thank God I had my camera, and I took a picture of it, and she caught me, and then she waved and smiled. And then this is Ruby and Alicia. Alicia actually went here. It's funny because I gave a talk last week at Roosevelt High School, and her brother was in the class. It was really funny. But I like this picture. It's one of those little tiny wallet photos from the Montebello Mall, And I wanted to blow it up really big because I love those photos, and also they look so miserable together that I just thought it was such an awesome image. And they're really kind of awkward, and it was really hard for me to do because it's such a small photo for me to work from, so that's why it looks really awkward too. And then I did these two for a show called So High School. And these are just ballpoint pen and glitter on notebook paper. Okay, I think that's it.
Through the work with very personal, very sometimes very vulnerable reflections as a very generous, very feminist act, and I think it's very much in keeping with the work of Barbara Carrasco, that generosity, definitely, intimacy, humor, the bittersweet, the ironic, but also something that Sandra said, that historical consciousness, always in the work, and a political consciousness. So I wanted to get connections going, sort of ping-pong between Barbara and all of the artists on the panel. But before I do that, I also wanted to say, just in relationship to these two shows, to A Brush with Life here, which if you haven't seen the show, please do see the show, make an effort to see the show, and Phantom Sightings over at LACMA. What I want to say about those two shows is that in the planning of Phantom Sightings, the other two curators, John Noriega, Howard Fox, and I, although we use this term after the Chicano movement in a way to address the fact that a number of the artists in the show, well, all of the artists in the show had been born in the 1970s and 1980s, so technically they were actually born after the height of the Chicano movement, and have very different relationships, as you see. Some very politicized, as in Sandra's case, where she was very politicized by her experience growing up in East LA and at UC Berkeley. Some inflected with, I would say, a more feminist politic, like Carly, and actually like Shizu, where you're seeing more an interest in infusing pop culture as feminist artists did, as Chicano artists did, but very much claiming a variety of references. I like to put it, one of the artists in the show who's friends with Sandra, who I met through Sandra, Arturo Romo, says, we did a show together actually where he said he was drawing from a vast arcade and he thought that Los Angeles was a vast arcade. Chicano art is a vast arcade, but the whole history of art and history of pop culture that he was drawing from, and I think that Carly, Shizu, and Sandra are drawing it from, is a vast arcade that contains Chicano art but also kind of goes beyond it. What I wanted to say, though, about these two shows is that when the curators and I were talking about placing Chicano art in relationship to the show, it was very important that we weren't saying this is post-Chicano, this is over Chicano art, over beyond Chicano art, boring, been there. And we didn't want to say that it was a rupture either, because I think that, as you've just seen from all of the presentations, there is a continuation of the work that artists like Barbara were doing since the 1970s, in your case, since the 1970s to the present. So Barbara, I want to just ask you, because we are kind of speaking so informally and personally, your thoughts about the artist's presentations that you just saw and some of the connections that you might see, or maybe connections to your own art that you see in their work. That's a big one.
Well, I'm probably the only one here on this panel that was actually part of the Chicano movement. I mean, actively involved in the, and actually there was one person who was doing Jesus Trevino was doing a documentary on Chicano artists, and he considers me part of the second wave of Chicano activism, because people who preceded me were actually my husband, who's in the Phantom Sightings show, Harry Yebo, and there was a lot of other really great artists during that time that were very inspired by the movement itself. I happened to meet Cesar Chavez when I was a student at UCLA, and based on what I heard him say, that sort of really brought me into the Chicano movement, because I was so inspired by what he said, that he wanted to dedicate his whole entire life to bettering the lives of the most exploited workers in America, farm workers. And I was 19 years old at the time. I wasn't actually a student at UCLA, I was at West LA College. But I was on the campus because my boyfriend at the time was going to school there. And so I didn't know, I had no idea that he was going to actually take me up on my offer to get involved. I worked with him for 15 years, and it was a really great experience. And I think what's really interesting is that people expect political artists or people like Sandra. I was really impressed with Sandra's work because she really is really continuing that really that political activism that that we were all involved in. But I think it's really also important to see that people. I think it's interesting. I think people always assume that political artists only do political art, you know. So people are kind of amazed that that I do these little tiny miniatures that they sell. They're just jewelry art, and they have nothing to do with the political movement. But it's really interesting that people want to pigeonhole you and you know stereotype you, and so that's why I really like Shiva's work and Sam's work, Carly's work, and actually there's Linda Ariola, who's back here. She's a really great artist. I remember when I put her in a show once, a couple of my students at Fullerton was teaching. I taught all over the place, but they said, well, her work really isn't, you know, Chicana. And she just had a show recently called Vaguely Chicana, so you should see that. It's a really good, but I think she's such a really gifted artist. I think everybody has a different perspective, and I mean, bring to that whole idea of Chicana, you know, so many different ways of looking at it and identifying with it. So I think that's what I really admire about the artists here. So everybody's got a different perspective on the, not only the term, but and going back to what Karen said about this show being inspired by, or this company inspired by WAC, what's interesting, I was being considered for that exhibit, and unfortunately, I wasn't part of it. I wasn't included, but I was really upset, not because I was personally excluded. Actually, I was, but because Yolanda Lopez, who is a really great artist, Yolanda Lopez in the Bay Area, she's a very strong feminist, a very great role model for a lot of us Latinas. She was being excluded, and I remember telling the curator, have you looked at her work? And oh yeah, we looked at her work. And it was, she really didn't know her work. She didn't know, she thought she was younger than I am. And I said, well, that doesn't make any, then you don't know her work, you know? So it was just really interesting to see, and I remember Sybil Venegas, who co-curated this exhibit with Karen. Sybil was the first person to bring this to her attention, that there are Chicano art feminists out there. Because I think this curator actually publicly said there aren't any Chicano feminists. She actually said that at some conference. So Sybil said, you're wrong, you know, and there's people like Yolanda, Barbara, she was naming all these women, and still, and there's only a couple of tokens every once in a while that are included in the shows, but it's really, we're not taking it seriously as feminists. It's really unfortunate. So I'm just so happy that there are more women artists that are producing work that is important work. And so, anyway, and then people like Tiffany Lopez, who's a scholar who is also documenting a lot of the work. I think it's so important to have people like her to do that. Anyway, sorry it took so long.
There's a number of things. I mean, that element of documentation too, which is included in the show, ephemera, I guess, if you want to say, or the, you know, the personal artifacts of your life that is also woven through the show. I like that you see the public dimension, the banners, the smaller scale things that were also, I thought, not a surprise to me, but I like seeing them woven in that whole history. You as the activist artist, but definitely the personal and the political, and certainly that is the core of feminist art. It was a real lack and whack, I think.
That's a good book.
Sad, lack of whack, yeah. But one thing too, just to connect your work to Sandra's work, the experience that you had with the censorship of LA history, Mexican perspective, And walking into the show, and the first thing you see is that great painting. I love how it's installed to just leaning against the title wall, censorship, that in some ways documents that experience. But what is the apparition in the center of the painting? It's the face of Siqueiros, which reminded me of Sandra's plaque, the PRS plaque, intervening there. I love that connection. I don't know, Sandra, if you wanted to talk a little bit about seeing this work. I don't know if you just saw this piece for the first time.
Yeah, actually it was. And actually, I just enjoyed this whole show and didn't know until the end that I started at the end and I actually saw the show from backwards. So it was interesting seeing your most recent work and then going to your older work. But I could relate, I think it's such a rare experience to see an entire body of an artist's work and to kind of trace their journey and trace their path and see where they've gone and how some ideas kind of come back, some tendencies surface, you know, years and years and years later. I could relate, I'm not really going to talk about the censored piece, but I could relate to the show more in this dealing with outward issues and then also going inward. And I kind of go back and forth in my work as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think with all of the artists up here that, and I think, of course, the curators had something to do too with sketching this this portrait in a way of your work. But that seemingly seamless movement from the dealing with the external to somehow representing the internal and the emotional. You mentioned before, though, Barbara, you produce those smaller drawings. Consumption, or did you feel when you were making those that this was something different than the other type of work that you were doing, let's say with a printmaking atelier or whether the commission projects? When do you carve out that space to do that type of work, or is that always the type of work that you're doing as you're doing these other commission projects?
Well, I think it's like Shizu had, you know, this need to do work for yourself. You know, like, I like the idea that she did these paintings of people doing a critique, you know, or accompanying her doing a critique, because I was at CalArts too, so I kind of could relate to that whole experience of feeling like a very different from the rest of the student body. You know, these are students who come from privileged backgrounds, and I grew up in a government housing project, so I just, you know, it's really an odd kind of, you have to find time to do this personal work, just to sustain yourself into, I think it's important to do that kind of work. And also just paying homage to like Frida Kahlo and a lot of the images, you know, sort of paying homage to women who are role models to you. Like I did, when I did the portrait of Dolores Huerta, I consider that both a political and personal project. You know, because politically I have a lot of respect for her as a human being. I think she's one of our greatest, you know, leaders that we have. But on a personal level, she's been a mentor to me, and she's been a nurturer to me, and to so many women. And I think that's important also to look at that also, that balance of political and personal.
What struck me too about the show too is how you're depicting your community and your friends, and Dolores Huerta being one of like your friends and showing that side of things, or even putting your friends on like TV was kind of cute too, like suggestion, like, okay, well, I don't really see these people on TV, I'm gonna put them on my own TV, and think I do is I don't see myself, there's not a lot I can relate to in mass media, so I'm going to create my own images that speak to me and show the world that.
I think looking to the way that Barbara also altered the form of the altar, you know, the space of remembrance, that you also brought in more popular, familiar imagery that you were just casting with your friends. Of course, you know, when your friends are Dolores Huertas, that's different, but the same, you still get that sense of the personal, you get that sense of the personal connection. I wanted to ask too, there's portraiture in Phantom Sightings, and there's portraiture that's consistent and also self-portraiture, which I think is often or more recently thought of as sort of certainly I think this came up with Shiza's presentation, I think a bit with Carly's presentation as well, that going through art school, and maybe Barbara, you also came up against the set of tolerance as well. When you do decide to do portraits or focus on portraiture as your major sort of thematic content, you are going against, well, here now 2008, but even in the late 80s, you are going up against the certainly postmodern art tendencies of that time, and now different tendencies, interventionist or post-conceptual or what you want to call them, whatever you want to call them. It is, so in a way, people will say, oh, it's so retro to do portraiture. I'm just interested in why you are still doing portraiture, not all, but I think Sandra, as well, photographically, has reinvented portraiture. But why you are all consistently interested in portraiture. Barbara, you want to start?
Well, when I was thinking of the poster design for this exhibit, I did consider doing a self-portrait, and I thought, what's to look at a 52-year-old lady? No, but I thought about my daughter. I thought about showing someone who is, I'm passing sort of the baton back, the paintbrush to my daughter, and just younger people. I see through her eyes, I see a lot how women, how young girls are being already thinking about body image and about, you know, about how popular culture affects the way they think about themselves. And it's just, so that's the reason why I decided to do also the COLA exhibition. When they asked me to be part of that, I did focus on children, because here was an artist having children, a daughter, you know, and I think that really changed me in much the same way that there was a really famous artist who had she was married to Leon Golub. I forgot her name right now. Oh my God, I'm having a menopausal moment. She was Nancy Spiro. Oh yeah, she wrote a really good essay about how she felt like, you know, she was very famous, and she, as soon as she became a mother, her art career took, you know, second, you know, it was second to her being her role as mother. And I kind of, it was just interesting for me too. Carly's gonna go through that pretty soon, Carly. You know, where it just will change your life.
That drawing spoke to me, and how, I mean, now I'm going to give birth in 4 months, and how, whether or not I want to, it's going to inform my work. And how much all of our work is so autobiographical, and how we can't escape that, and, you know, and how we play on that.
I think all work is, in essence, a self-portrait. Any artist does sort of self-portraiture work, or work that is reflective of their own experience and life. I think for me, I maybe just do it a little bit more literally in terms of depicting people. But at the same time, I have come across people wanting to like put down like portraiture painting specifically as being sort of a has-been genre. But I would just say too that that's such a that statement, I mean, that sort of notion in itself is sort of outdated and out of fashion as well, because we're in this sort of moment where everything has been done before. There's nothing that hasn't. And we're constantly just recycling and reusing and reinterpreting different genres in our own way.
I think we're going to open it up to the audience. If anyone has questions for Barbara, she's with Carly, Sandra, feel free to raise your hand. Yes.
This question is for all the artists.
young women and issues of like self-empowerment and all that, because I think right now my daughter's 13 and I'm sort of just in that kind of mode, mommy mode, and I feel really proud of the fact that recently on Friday in Modesto, my portrait of Dolores Huerta was made into a Girl Scout merit badge. All these young Chicanas get the merit pageant. Tiffany was there to document it, and it was really great because she asked a little girl, "How do you feel about being one of the 100 young girls to receive the pageant?" I think she said she felt like a celebrity. And this is a little, you know, Chicana poor. You know, that's a poor town, Modesto. And I was so inspired by that event. I've never seen Dolores look more happy, and she just turned 80. How old was she? 78, excuse me. 78 years old the week before. And so I've never seen her look so radiant. She was extremely happy that she'd become this icon for so many girls. I was a Girl Scout, so was Dolores, so it's especially close to our heart. So I think I'm going to be doing a lot more work like that, images for young women.
A lot of my work involves my family, so with the last body of work, just dealing with my father, I decided to expand into my whole family, so that's the current body of work I'm working on, and to then include the one coming up, too. So
I'm looking forward to not making art for a while, just getting back in touch with things that I've lost touch with, and rituals that I've had since I was 13 years old and would ditch school and go downtown to downtown LA and just wander through downtown for a day. And so I've been really busy, and so I miss just being able to go out and check out parts of the city, you know, and see where the city's at. You know, I love LA, and it's just always changing and transforming. So that beach, go to the beach this summer, hiking, reading. So I'll see where I'm at afterwards.
Well, that's also part of making art too.
Yeah.
I'm drawing a big car right now, because it's a 1983 Toyota Celica, and it's going to be in the Peterson Automotive Museum for a couple months on, I guess it's like a lowrider art show. So that's what I'm working on.
Rita, do you want to tell us what you're working on now?
I'm actually going to do an exhibition with Andy Chawoya about Osmo, the group that Harry Gamboa was part of with three others originally, but which expanded to include many, many people, including Barbara, in a wild variety of collaborations on the street, in theaters, and alternative spaces. And other destinations, points unknown. So that will happen first at the Williams College Museum of Art, and then eventually it will make its way to LACMA.
And of course, OSCO has a presence here on our campus as well, which is probably something you'll be exploring maybe in the future. So I want to thank each one of you for a thought-provoking and very personally revealing conversation, and invite you, the audience, for the next half an hour or so, if you haven't seen the exhibition or if you'd like to go revisit it, it'll be open, and it's been a wonderful evening. Thank you so much.